And you'll have to excuse me. I usually try to dress a little better, but I have to go straight from here to assist in my son's football game.
There we go.
And got it in
got
here.
It. Yeah, go laying hands on people. We're in good
shape. Yeah.
Right.
And unfortunately, I had a doctor's appointment yesterday, and they gave me a flu shot and my shingles vaccine. Then afterwards, they said, "Now you're going to feel a little fluish tomorrow." I said, "Well, that could have been better if you told me beforehand." But we're going to see where this goes. And, you know, I usually make all kinds of notes and all, but I decided when I was asked a few weeks ago, I'm not going to do that. I'm just going to get up here and hopefully God will take over and we'll just see what happens. But let's see, a little icebreaker. A few weeks ago, my son had to do a book report on a place outside the continental United States, and he picked the Canary Islands. And so we did some Googling and looking up facts, and did you know there are no canaries in the Canary Islands? And that just blew my mind. And so he wrote the report, and day or so later, I got to thinking about that, and on a whim, I said, "Well, I'm going to look up something." So I looked up the Virgin Islands, and you know what I found? They don't have canaries either. All right, my name's Drew, and I am an alcoholic. I appreciate the opportunity to share my story. It's always beneficial for me. I hope that someone may hear something that helps them. That's my goal. I was talking to God all the whole ride over here this morning saying, "Look, I can't put two thoughts together. I'm going to drag it up there and you're going to have to take over because I'm going to need some help." But let's see, it all started for me. I had my first drink when I was 13 years old on a Disney cruise with my parents and little sister. A nice whiskey sour. And when that hit my lips, I knew things were changing. Right then and there. I remember three things about that whole cruise. That whiskey sour. And then back then, my parents just sent me on, you know, a snorkeling trip. They didn't go. I was 13. And I remember the guide saying, "Who wants a Bahama Mama?" And so I had two Bahama Mamas. And when I got back to the cruise ship, promptly passed out in the room and thought, "This is the greatest thing I've ever done." I was born to two unbelievable parents who always gave me everything I needed, you know, protected me, guided me, and did all they could to make sure I never wanted for anything. When I was born, we were not well off at all. The house I came home to the hospital was a duplex that half of it had a dirt floor, and they said I just sat over there eating roly-poly bugs, so I'm going to blame a little bit on that. But, you know, my parents worked hard and, you know, gave me a life beyond my imagination that, you know, I could never repay them for. After that first drink, I knew alcohol did something for me that I really enjoyed. My parents used to say, "Oh, he's just real shy." But I was scared. I was fearful of everything. Being alone, abandonment. My dad worked out of town most weeks, and he'd come in town on the weekend, give me a good spanking for what I'd done during the week, and head back off. And, you know, our relationship didn't start in my memories, on a good foot. And I had a lot of resentments, but he was just doing the best he could. Through elementary school and all, I didn't really get into alcohol. I would sneak drinks, you know, as much as I could. I believe it was in 7th, 8th grade, they had the fair. I don't even remember what it's called, but you had to do projects, all the kids, and line them up in the hall. And I had talked my parents into letting me do how plants react to alcohol and cigarette smoke. And for some reason, they said, okay. And so the only reason I did it was so I could be sipping the beers and smoking some of the cigarette. I got to get the cigarette lit. So I'd go out on the back porch and... And, you know, I looking back on it, it was insane. But my mom just loved me so much, and she just gave me all the rope I needed. Starting in high school, you know, I went to a private high school over in Norcross, and, you know, I picked out the friends that snuck around, drank on the weekends, did all the partying. You know, I knew right then that was for me. I enjoyed letting loose, per se, but I was, you know, all through this time I was scared of my own shadow. I didn't like, you know, if I had to go into a place that I didn't know everyone, I would sit off in a corner, be quiet, and try not to cry till I could leave there. You know, this would have never happened, me standing up here, you know. And then, you know, it wasn't shyness, it was pure fear of me not wanting to feel the fear that I had. I've done some therapy and all, and it's in my, it's genetically, it seems, passed down. My mother and her side of the tree, you know, they were fearful people, and, you know, their big decision would be the first one that they made. So, coming into high school, early on, I would drink on the weekends a lot, and that was fun. But then by junior, senior year, it was a lot during the week, some skipping school, drinking every weekend. And my parents, you know, they discouraged it. They said, you don't be drinking and you're too young to drink, blah, blah, blah. And I would come home well after curfew, and I changed the clock by my dad because I had to wake him up every time I came home. So I changed the clock to where it looked like 11 o'clock and wake him up. He'd look at the clock and go back to sleep. I'd change it back, go to bed. And, you know, that's the kind of guy I was. I was a bully, but not to anyone that was bigger than me. You know, I enjoyed being the class clown. Would do anything anyone asked me to, so I could fit in. You know, I wanted everybody's approval. Did nothing for myself, only to get friends' approval. Made it through high school somehow. Found out later I had a dyslexia, and you know, my parents couldn't figure out why I couldn't pass any math classes. And somehow, being it was a private school, the only reason I graduated, I think, is because I paid them. My mom actually came to school one time. And I'd had a little tumor taken out of my knee, and it was finals time, and so I had to sit in the office, take the final, my mom there, and she would literally look up the answers as I was taking the final, and we both still failed the thing. I'm not from the brightest family. But, you know, through this whole time, I would get in trouble. I got arrested for the first time drinking when I was 16. Underage drinking at Six Flags. For some reason, they don't like people urinating off the sky buckets. Had a little issue with me. And so I got banned, lifetime banned, from Six Flags. And I hadn't been back to this day. I'm scared they got my picture. You know, that was the first time I'd been arrested for alcohol. There was four of us. We had to show up in a Cobb County court. We had to write out papers on the evening. It's kind of blurry. Write out papers on, you know, what was going on. And, you know, the other ones, judge said good, but when it got to me, she said, I think you need to go in for alcohol treatment. I said, only me? And my dad said, no, he's fine. He's fine. And so I didn't. But looking back, I don't know what she saw, but she knew. She knew right then. So I graduate high school. I go to college, and, you know, of course I wanted to pick a college that doesn't do much partying, need to get away. So I picked Georgia Southern. Wow. I was there 2.5 years. Very blurry memories. My English professor, first year, he called me dumbass. That was my name in there because I just sit in the back all hungover. And I did get some credits. I left after 2.5 years. I had 8 hours of credits. So I didn't really apply myself there. You know, I was just too busy partying every night. I gained, you know, the freshman 15, I did the freshman 50. You know, just every day I'd go get me a 12-pack. Of Milwaukee's best, you know, get a 12-pack for $5 and drink that and then go to the bars. There was less than 7,000 students when I was there, so we all knew each other, knew where the parties were, and I took advantage of every one. So I came home from that and moved back in my parents' basement and you know, still drank every day, doing little odd jobs. Started working with my dad. My dad, he's been in the real estate auction business since 76. So I kind of grew up around that. I really enjoyed it. I'd work summers doing that, always with older guys. You know, I was 18. They were mid-20s and luckily, my best friend, his older brother was a DeKalb County policeman, and so my first fake ID was a legitimate fake ticket. You know, back when they'd take your license, he wrote me out a fake ticket that, you know, they couldn't turn down. And so that got me what it got me. I was the one to buy all the drinks. So now we're moving on to, you know, it's becoming to where I'm drinking pretty much every day by the age of 20, I would guess. When I turned 21, that didn't mean anything to me. I'd been drinking for years before that. And then a couple years go by, and I move in with some friends down in Buckhead. We get a house down on Wyuka Road, and I get some jobs bouncing and bartending in some bars down there. And that's when things really turned ugly. Drugs were introduced, doing a lot of cocaine and ecstasy and weed occasionally. But it really started spiraling out about that time. And about that time, I met my future wife. She worked the days I could get up and go to work. I'd go to my dad's office, and she was working in the office downstairs. And you know, I said, "Wow, she's pretty hot." And so ended up, we started dating, and found out she partied just like I did. And so I said, "Ooh, I'm going there. I found me a good one." And so we partied in Buckhead all the time, and wherever we went, you know, we were drinking, drugging, whatever. And this went on for years, years. Lived down there a year, moved up to Duluth for a couple years, and then moved in with her. We got an apartment down Bell's Ferry, and you know, it started, the drinking wasn't as fun quite anymore, and this is probably age 30. Still had some good times. Those that, I don't understand those that say they didn't have a good time drinking. I had a blast until I didn't. I crossed that line probably early on, but where I could notice it around when we started living together, because you know, there were no other buddies there drinking with me. It was me trying to get her to drink. And, you know, we weren't down partying, so she didn't have to drink. You know, it wasn't in front of her. And so we go on and ask her to marry me, and for some reason she said yes, and bought a house right over here in Ackworth. And I would have parties all the time, getting people to come over. You know, anytime I could get someone to come over, that was great, because it gave me an excuse to drink like I wanted, when I wanted. And I would be at all the little local bars around then. And by this time, my brain's a little foggy. While I was at Georgia Southern, I got a DUI. And, you know, got taken down to the jail. My buddies bailed me out. My dad knew a guy that knew the judge. And it ended up, my sentencing was take the judge to lunch and give him $500. And that was it. No probation, no nothing. I had to take him to Snooki's to get him a lunch and give him $500, and we were on our way. So I never had real consequences and didn't care if I did. You know, I'd been pulled over between that time and when I got married. I'd been pulled over for DUIs several times, but somehow could talk my way out of it. You know, make up all kinds of crazy excuses on why I was driving erratically or why they smelt a beer on my breath. But I got out of them. Although I did get one in 1996, and that one was for, we're headed to the Braves World Series game, and got pulled over, getting off on Fulton Street, had our World Series tickets. And they said, you know, the car, it looked like Cheech and Chong pulling over, smoke coming out the windows. I was with three of my buddies, and they took me to jail, handcuffed down in the basement of Grady. And, you know, that one I got convicted of, but I was seeing a girl whose aunt worked for Georgia State Patrol, and somehow that just disappeared off my record. And so, you know, God's been watching out, and I've just had no real consequences in my life up to that time. So we get married, and you know, we start trying to have a kid, and 2 years later, and we're still partying. She'll drink, and you know, she enjoyed the cocaine. I wouldn't do coke after 10 p.m. because I just wanted to get up in the morning. So for some reason, it just didn't grab me. But every time I woke up, she'd be sitting on the edge of the bed with no coke around. Well, okay. But once she got pregnant, she cut it all off. And I lost my drinking buddy, my little partying buddy. And she didn't have any problem with it. So it caused me to be more, okay, I'm going out, blah, 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 and just would leave her and at the house and go to the bars, drink up. Some nights she'd have to come get me, that, you know, just bitch at me. And, you know, our son is born 17 years ago in June, or this coming it'll be 18 years ago, at Northside. And, you know, I'm drunk right there in the delivery room, just had to drink by this time. And, you know, he comes out and he's blue. And they're yelling code blue stat, you know, and trying to get him to breathe. And I'm just sitting there going, what the fuck? And trying to block her from seeing, because I know she would just go nuts. And then they just rush him out. And they were real busy that weekend. And so she gets taken to a room, and instead of, you know, what a normal person stay and comfort your wife, your kids, and who knows what's going on, I left. I went to the bar, and that was my, you know, that's what I thought would be my best move. And, you know, it happened again 4 years later when my second son was born. Drunk, and the nurse or midwife was saying, look, sir, can you just step back? I was in there yelling like I was running the thing. And, you know, and looking back, just what a loser. Who would do that to their wife? Their, you know, and just real, real low spots. So we move on, and I'm now drinking because I can't not drink. And for my 40th birthday, me and my buddy are out at the bar drinking, and you know, he says, "All right, let's go to your house." And, oh, one more. So we get there, and I open the door, and there's a bunch of folks in there. And I left. I shut the door. I said, fuck this intervention. And but it was a surprise birthday party. that's how much I knew I had a problem. And, you know, and then 4th of July, 2010, I always threw a 4th of July party up at my parents' lake house on Lake Harwell. And, you know, I'd have a water bottle always with me, but it wasn't water. It was moonshine, because the vodka wasn't doing anymore. I had to have the moonshine. And, you know, by this time I was 75 pounds heavier than I am now. And, just really bloated. And I come back and I'm just in all kinds of pain. She said, just go to the hospital. Go down there. And I got pancreatitis. And, doctor says, you know, you drink again, you're going to die. And unfortunately, my wife was in the room and heard that, because I knew I wasn't done. And so I came into an AA meeting for the first time ever, late July 2010. Pick up a white chip, and, you know, the doctor had given me painkiller, maybe Percocets or something, because of the pancreatitis, the pain. And so I made it. You know, I quit drinking until those painkillers wore out. About 3 weeks later, and I decided, oof, I'm in pain. And, you know, I went to drink a Coors Light, and it hurt going down, but it went down. And that sent me 2 years of pure hell. You know, I would drink, I drank every single day, sick, not sick, whatever function, it didn't matter. I had to drink. And I would cry almost every day as I drank because I couldn't not do it. And that AA had just flown out of my head. And I didn't know what to do. And I resigned myself to the fact that I was going to drink every day. And, you know, that's what I was going to do. And then fast forward about 2 years later, in June of 2012, my wife had had enough. She had kicked me out a few times before. I could always talk my way back in. But this time she sent out a family-wide email about all my shit. And there was a big family meeting in my parents' basement. And, right then and there, it was all coming at me. Why are you doing this? And I just gave up. I said, I don't want to live like this. And all of a sudden, I had this release when I finally surrendered to the fact that I don't know what to do. And, you know, 2 days later, I was checking in Ridgeview and spent about a month and a half there. And, wow, you know, they say they brainwash you, and I needed that, man, because my thinking was so screwed up, and it introduced me to just things I'd never heard of, emotions. They'd go around, we'd have to check in at night and tell how we feel, the emotion. And I'd say, good. No, that's not an emotion. So they had to give me a chart. I was the only idiot that had a chart, and I'd have to point to the face. And then they'd tell me how I felt. And I came in here, I guess in August, and, you know, that's where I was introduced to the Breakfast Club. And Corey, a bunch of y'all were here. And Tim, and, you know, and I sat right back there where Josie's sitting, and I cried for 2 years. And back then, it seemed like it was a tag meeting, every meeting, and Drew. And, you know, I think Corey and Karen had wagers on how long I was going to make it here. Because I was a wreck, man. I was a wreck. And it was a long, drawn-out process to get back. About 6 months into it, Charlie back there says, I hear you got a grill. I said, yeah, I got a grill. He goes, well, we have the Hound Place barbecue, and we want you to cook for it. Show up on Wednesday at the board meeting, Hound Place board meeting. I go in there, and I'm just, you know, I'm still in a daze. I walk out of there. I'm on the Hound Place board at 6 months sober in charge of activities, and I don't know what I'm doing, but I've cooked the barbecue ever since, and I cannot repay you enough for doing that for me. You know, when I do things that are uncomfortable for me, that's when I grow. That's when I can see that, man, your opinions aren't true. Just do it. And I learned so much through the years. Damon with his, you know, it would take me about 6 months to get it. But I always remembered him. And, you know, that's what I, you know, something I heard from Damon, don't get in the dentist chair before it's time for the root canal. And that's how I treated it this morning. I wasn't going to think about this. It was time to get up here. You know, I'm plugging along and, you know, living great. You know, business is going good. Family's doing great. I'm back in the good graces. You know, I've got all these friends. And everything was wonderful. Then last year, you know, after COVID hit, you know, we started getting auctions canceled. You know, my parents started, you know, they were isolating and meetings, and I was still doing great, you know, through June, July, August, I'm feeling good. Come September, my dad, you know, he's been my mentor. He fell and hit his head. And, of course, being a Dixon, we don't go to the doctor. And ended up having some brain swelling. And he has no short-term memory. And about that time, business just shut off. You know, my main clients are banks and REITs, and you know, they're under moratoriums. They can't sell anything. And we had 8 employees. One of them passed away about then, and another one retired. And my dad pulled me aside and said, "Look, I don't know what's going on. I can't do this." And I'm just sitting there going, "What? No. I can't do it. This is crazy." And so I was, you know, just basically forced into leading the company. And we went from 8 employees to 4 employees, you know, like that. And, you know, I never knew what to do. My dad would tell me, "Here, call them, do this, do that." And that's how I was raised. And that's gone. And, you know, and then about that time, my mom started having some issues with her health. And, you know, and just got into a big argument. I'm a mama's boy with my sister, who I love dearly, and my mom, and I'm just losing my crap. You know, I'm still coming to meetings. You know, I had my sponsor, my first sponsor I had till about 3 years ago. Then he went out, and I got his sponsor to sponsor me. And you know, when COVID hit, he holed up. There was no going to see him. And then come about this time when all this other stuff's happening in September, he disappears. You know, won't return texts, won't return calls. Find out he's gone out. So I sent 2 of my sponsors out. My other one's not here today, and I've warned him. I said, "Look, you start feeling freaky, get rid of me." I started taking on all this pressure of thinking I was going to be the one to change the economy, to make the company work. And I stopped coming to near as many meetings. Usually I'm here Tuesday through Saturday, every morning. And that started changing. And I started having these, you know, I used to think I'd have panic attacks, but I was having true anxiety attacks. I'd go in the office and I'd sit at the computer and just sit there for hours, not knowing what to do, just frozen. And by 2-3 o'clock, I'd head home and just curl up in bed and cry. And when I'd come to meetings, you know, and this is all ego, I would, you know, share experience strength and hope. Not my worry, my pain, my struggles. And that's so important because that, you know, looking back, that's what all I did my first 2 years when I got 8.5 years. I just told them how life was shit for me. And I got to a place where my ego said, no, you need to, you're sober 8.5 years. You need to be sharing how to do that. And I got away from, sharing my pain. And I went to less and less meetings, talking to less and less people. I was sponsoring a few people at the time. They'd play hell trying to get in touch with me. I would come to meetings now and then. I don't know if any of y'all remember, but I was missing quite a few. And then, it just got so great that, and it's weird looking back, drinking never crossed my mind. Never crossed my mind. Something else that never crossed my mind was going to my doctor and telling him what's going on. But what did cross my mind was I cannot feel like this. I'm going to kill myself. And I had those thoughts. And it just so happened I'd run into an old friend who used to sell marijuana, drink with me, and we ran into each other at Kroger. He said, well, I just moved back in the area, got a little townhouse. I said, well, man, I've quit drinking, doing all right. I'd run into him back probably June, July, and told him how great I was doing, not drinking, being sober. He goes, yeah, I quit drinking too. I said, well, that's awesome, dude. And he had come by our house. He knows Stephanie and the boys and said hi to them. And then sometime in September, he had called me and I was on the way home or something. He said, come by and see my new place. Went by, saw it, and I noticed there was a bong over in the corner. I said, oh, I thought you were sober. He goes, yeah, I'm sober. I smoke weed every now and then, but I'm sober. I said, what? That doesn't sound right. And so just left. But as this, by the end of September, when I was in all this pain, that came to my mind. And we'd been texting it on. He said, yeah, it's called California Sober. I said, what? California Sober. And and so, it crossed my mind, that may be what I need. It's got the word sober in it. First part of October, I said, well, I'm either going to kill myself or I don't know what I'm going to do. So I went and saw him. And I said, tell me about this California Sober. And so got high. Probably, I don't know, first part of October. And I did not feel anxiety. That shit has changed since I was smoking it back in the 90s. Being the good alcoholic I am, and an addict I am, I said, well, give me one of them. Give me a vape pen, and I'm going to keep those in case I have an anxiety attack. And, I didn't smoke every day, but if I was felt an anxiety attack coming on, I would. And that lasted about a week, and my God works so wonderfully in my life. I was sitting... I'd gone out looking at property and coming home, and I'd smoked a cigar. My wife hates that shit. And so I was sitting in a little strip center, before I go back to the house, just kind of airing out and checking some emails, and a policeman pulls up behind me. And he comes up, he goes, "Were you in an accident?" I said, "No, I'm not in an accident." And he said, "Well, we had a report of a black car that was in an accident. Want to check with you?" I said, "I'm not even in a black car." And and then he goes, "Well, I smell marijuana." I said, "Well, I hadn't been smoking it. I'm not sure how, but this shit was strong." And I didn't, and you know, earlier I said, "I can't take this in the house. I got kids. If my kids find it, you know, I don't want them." So he got out of the car, and I told him where it was. And I did not know that a vape pen's a felony. So he gets that out, and I have a license to carry a gun, so I had a gun in my car. So that's two felonies. And, you know, takes me to jail. I just can't believe what's happening. You know, all I can think about is, well, there goes my career. You can't have real estate license with felonies. Just can't do it. Found out the other day you can't leave the country with felonies. Damn it. And, you know, so I find an attorney, go to my doctor that next week, and just, she knows I'd come clean with her about my drinking early on. And I came clean about this and just sat there and cried with her. She's the best. And, you know, every time I go in for the past 9 years, she says, "Well, you're still going to your meetings, you're still so..." Yeah. But I told her my anxiety and just what happened. She goes, "Why didn't you call me or get in here? I'd give you something, you know, to take it away." And, you know, it never crossed my mind. It was my ego thinking I could handle this and let me just get through this down point, and I won't do it anymore. But God saw other ways. And it turns out they empty your wallet and get all your cash out, and I didn't realize you had to ask them for that back. So I go down back to the jail a few days later and say, "Look, I left my cash, y'all." And so they said, "Well, we'll be right back." And I hit it on shift change, and here came the folks that gave me my strip. If you hadn't been strip searched at a jail, you hadn't lived. That's humiliation. And here came the guys that did it. And for some reason, God said, "We'll speak to them." And, you know, I thanked them. And I don't know why, I just said, "Thank y'all for, you know, doing what you did. You probably saved my life." Because I know it wouldn't have stopped, you know, and God knew that and said, no, not now. And, you know, it was, they said, "You're going to be all right." And my attorney tells me, "You're going to be all right." Well, that happened October 12 something. Court has not taken place. I still have two felonies on my record, and my real estate licenses are lapsing. You know, things aren't great at work. But let me tell you something. This past year has been awesome. You know, it taught me that I can get through anything. And you know, I came back in and just, y'all saw that mess. You know, I've just been reapplying myself to the stuff I did when I came back in. I tell on myself. Poor Tim, we bumped into at a meeting. He said, "How you doing?" I said, "Not good. Not good." And, you know, so many people. Jim drugged me over to his house, him and Stacy just hugging and loving on me, and convincing me, "You're going to be okay, man. Life is not over." And so many, Kevin calling me every day, And, you know, that's what this thing's all about. And thank God for y'all. Because, you know, today it's all out of my hands. What happens is going to happen. I get two felonies. Well, there's a lot of stuff in the U.S. I can go look at. My life is not over. It's just beginning. And I accept that today. So many things, you know, the humbler I am, the less ego. And my ego had gotten to a point. This really crushed it, and thank God, because it needed it. It got to a point where I wasn't sharing what's going on with me. I was trying to tell you how to work a program. You know, I wasn't telling you about me working mine. And you know, from this whole year. It took me a little bit to calm down after that, but I'm okay today. I've gotten back into journaling, and that's so big for me to put pen to paper. Look, I'm scared to death. You know, and just give it to God. Wake up, go through the next day, look back on it and say, man, what were you scared of? Look at you. You made it through today. Nothing happened. And that's what it is. You know, I still have, I can let myself worry a little too much now and then when it comes to work, you know, not knowing what's going to happen. But I have no control over that. I'm not in charge of changing how the world's operating right now. All I can do is what's in front of me and do it to the best of my abilities. And, you know, these traditions, I'd heard early on, you know, take these traditions and work them outside of here. And, you know, that has done so much for me and my family. You know, I'm no longer the head of the household. Thank God. You know, what a relief. I'm no longer the man at work. I'm a worker. You know, I'm right there beside you, Scott. Let's do this thing. I can't figure this thing out. Let's figure it out. And it just takes so much pressure off me. Because I don't know what the next right thing is. You know, I was hearing... someone shared the other day, if God would just give me a list, do this, do that, do this, do that, how sweet it would be. You know, because that's what my dad did for me for years and years, and that's gone away. And, you know, I don't have to do my list. I can, things are going to crop up. You know, if I can focus on pausing and just let the things develop and not react immediately, but, you know, be a part of doing things that are uncomfortable. You know, those, when I started on the board doing Halloween dances, Valentine dances, oh, God, it was miserable. And I dreaded it. But I did it, and I met so many people. And I always afterwards said, man, I'm glad I did that. So I've gotten back into that a little. I do. I show up once a month to do a movie here on a Sunday. It's October 10th, usually the second Sunday. We show a free movie and have pizza and drinks and all. And I love football. So I'm missing the Falcons, usually once a month. And I'm thinking about next Sunday, and I'm going, oh, God, Edward Scissorhands, really? I could be watching football, eating a little chili. But, you know, I'm going to love it. I'm going to love it. We have a good group that comes in here. We laugh and have a good time watching it, you know, and I got to grow through it. Just don't go through it. Take it as it comes. And life brings on new meaning. And that's all I got to say about that. Thank y'all for having me, and God bless.